Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our presenters, Stephen Shea. Steve is chair of the mathematics department at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire, author of the books Basketball Analytics, Spatial Tracking, and Basketball Analytics, Objective and Efficient Strategies for Understanding How Teams Win, and a consultant for NBA teams and players. At the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Steve will deliver a talk titled Basketball Analytics, Spatial Tracking. Steve, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So I'll just start off by telling me a little bit about your background. You have an academic career in math. How'd that lead into sports analytics?
All right. So I can't say that there's a great link between my math degree and sports analytics. I was a pure mathematician as opposed to applied mathematician. I didn't go into graduate school thinking about sports analytics at all, really. It wasn't until I took my position here at St. Anselm College when an old friend, a high school friend, Chris Baker, who's also the co-author of one of my basketball books, reached out actually with some hockey analytics questions. So I'll back up a couple years as to how we got there. I had dragged Chris into fantasy sports when we were in high school. And Chris went on to get a computer engineering degree, and when he was in college, he started writing algorithms and programs to try to predict which players would be the most successful. And he did it for fantasy purposes, really. But then over the years, he started to realize that some of his models worked pretty well in the real world too, right? These players weren't just good for fantasy purposes. They were good for the NHL, for the real game. And so he had reached out to me to add a little bit of formality to what he was doing. At that point, I had finished my PhD in math, had a good understanding of statistics, and he said, I've been guessing and checking on a few parts here. Can we make this? Can we optimize this? And so off we went. Actually, so this is going back about 8 or 9 years. Off we went in hockey analytics first.
Okay, why hockey? Just a personal favorite sport of one of you guys, or?
Yeah, I would say it was Chris Baker's first interest. He got a little more serious in that sport than some of the others. Hockey was appealing to me at the time. So again, we're going back maybe about 8 or 9 years. By that point, baseball was pretty serious into analytics. Basketball was coming around, right? This was after Dean Oliver and John Hollinger's sort of seminal work, right, in the area of their books, for example. So basketball was already moving in that direction, but hockey you could say they were at the bare minimum, right, by comparison. And I found hockey appealing because I thought it was an industry where we could get ahead of the wave, essentially. We could do maybe a year or two's worth of work before anyone else, before the competitors had jumped in the industry.
Okay. Okay, so you mentioned Dean Oliver's seminal book, Basketball on Paper. You mentioned John Hollinger. What inspired you to write a book on the subject then, and how do you go about doing it in a new way that's covering ground that hadn't already been covered?
All right, so the way we transitioned from hockey to basketball, it started with a visit to the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. I went in 2012, I guess it was. And at the time, we were working exclusively in hockey, but we hadn't really released most of what we had done publicly. We didn't do that originally because it was just a hobby. We weren't trying. We weren't thinking of releasing it publicly. It was more for our own enjoyment. And then eventually, we didn't release it publicly because we thought it had value. So I went to the MIT conference in 2012, and the first day I had a lot of fun. All these people around talking sports analytics. But by the second day, I was pretty frustrated because there were a lot of people I knew, a lot of people I wanted to talk to, but nobody knew me, right? Nobody wanted to talk to me. So I left. I talked to my collaborator, Chris. I said, we need to build a public brand. We need a public image. People have to know who we are and what we're doing. Otherwise, we're not going to have the conversations we need to have. At the time, he was reluctant to do it in hockey. And so basketball was my first passion. And I said, well, let's do it in basketball. So while I was at that conference, I picked up a flyer for the Stat Geek Idol competition at teamrankings.com. And it was a college basketball analytics competition. The deadline for the submission was maybe about 2 weeks away. And as I said, at the time, we weren't doing any basketball analytics. We didn't have a database to work with or anything like that. So I didn't really think I was going to enter, but I had a couple free hours on a Saturday, which is rare, given I have four small children. But I guess at the time, less three small children. But I had a few spare hours on a Saturday. I sat down and put something together. Had an idea. Actually, what I looked into were player involvement metrics, kind of look at the extent to which players on a team, in this case, share the offense. So the question was, if I look at college basketball teams, good Division I college basketball teams, you know, does there seem to be a benefit if you're spreading the scoring, right? If you're relying on three or four or five, you know, guys to kind of contribute, you know, the type of box score for five guys are in double digits, or is it better to have maybe one or two, you know, dominant players, those guys that are getting two guys getting north of 20 a night. And it turned out that for Division I college basketball, it was a lot better to have one or two. You know, so sharing the load didn't seem to work. And I think the main reason for that is at the college level right now, there's a huge difference between premier talent and sort of the rest of the pool. So if you're talking about the top teams in the country, your Kentucky or Kansas, right, those types of schools, you know, their leading scorers are future lottery pick type players, right? Real talented guys. So that was the reason. But I did that. I entered that competition. And a couple weeks later, I got some good news from them. I was a finalist, but more importantly, one of their judges, Mark Cuban, liked what I did and he wanted to see it in the NBA. So, you know, I went, that was a good bit of news. Took a couple hours of my time, put in a little effort in basketball, and I got some positive feedback from someone who has a pretty good knowledge of the game, right? And so that told me that maybe I could do something of value here. And at that point, I said, let's try to write a book. Let's try, if we're going to do something, let's try to go big. Let's get a lot of thoughts on paper. And that's where it started.
And you covered, and again, I know I've told you this earlier, but I've read both of your books and they're great and I really enjoyed them. You covered a wide range of topics in that first book. Where did those ideas come from? And how did you tie them all together?
That's a good question. I think it was, although we weren't working in basketball in the years prior, you know, we were asking a lot of the same questions in hockey. So when you think about analytics in a lot of different areas that it can touch, if you think about analytics and sort of what are the fundamental principles, so, you know, in terms of areas, you think in terms of how do you build a roster, how do you evaluate players, but also game strategy, what's the right way to play. In terms of fundamental principles in analytics, you think in terms of efficiency, right? So you're thinking, how do we measure how efficient players are or teams are, or lineups are in certain actions? And then you also think about how you relate things like production and context. So, you know, how do you look at one player scoring 20 points per game on this team versus someone scoring 20 points per game on that team? Beyond even the efficiency, you know, what are the pieces around them that are influencing their performance, right? How are their teammates helping or potentially hurting their cause? What is the system doing for them? What's their role in the offense? Who are they playing? All of those types of things. So, you know, there are a lot of parallels between the stuff we were doing in hockey and what you would want to do in basketball.
Okay, so how has the study of basketball from an analytics perspective changed in the roughly 5 years that you've been in it? I imagine it's been quite a bit, but what are some specific ways that you've seen it change?
So one thing that's happened is that the data has improved significantly. Right after we released the first book, the NBA went league-wide with the SportView spatial tracking system. And so to go from having discrete events, right, of course, the box score stats, those types of things, but also shot charts or, you know, other things that you could track manually, to having full information in terms of the location and the players was huge. I mean, that just opens up a whole world of ways to analyze the game that weren't there before. So from the analytics perspective, that was huge. And the but I'd also say that the game itself has been changing. I think we haven't hit an equilibrium point in terms of the use of the three-point line yet. Teams are spacing more and more. Teams are also still growing more accustomed to the sort of freedom of movement rules, things like you can't hand check like you used to, for example. So, you know, and all of the consequences of that. So, for example, you know, in terms of the three-point shot, we're seeing lineups with more shooters than before. You know, in spacing, we're seeing teams play five out at times, right? Five guys around the perimeter, nobody on the interior on offense. Defensively, we're seeing more positional versatility. We're seeing teams move away from having sort of traditional stay around the hoop big men to having guys that have to switch screens on the perimeter. We're seeing a transition from, you know, the best teams relying on the isolation of their star players to a team like Golden State, which they have a ton of star players, but they move the ball like no other team. And they've been doing it for a few years now that you know, they've been doing it since pre Durant. So yeah, I think that teams are still adjusting to some of the rule changes. I think that they're still adapting to some of the information coming in from analytics. And that's leading to, I guess in summary, a faster, more free flowing game.
Yeah. You know, and you just hinted at this, but I remember a couple of years ago reading a Zach Lowe article about SportView. Now, I want to say it was the Raptors and how they used it. And it was fascinating stuff. But one of the upshots I had from it was that there's still a lot of, we don't know how to use this data yet. This is all really good stuff. And we can see, you know, down to the inch where our defenders are positioned. And maybe he should have been 2 feet to the right to be in better help position, stuff like that. But how do you take all this rich data that we have right now and turn it into something actionable that's going to lead to a better product out there? I mean, do you still sense that there's this what do we do with all this great stuff mentality right now, or have they come a long way in how we analyze that?
I think we've made a lot of progress in the last couple of years. That said, it's still a question we're trying to answer. You know, I could say I've seen new versions of that in recently. We're now seeing spatial tracking systems that teams can employ in practice. They're using wearable tech, devices you'd put on a uniform or a shoe, and that's a less expensive version than the SportView system. So we're seeing now, like colleges, for example, can have spatial tracking in practice, and we're asking questions like, "Well, what do we care, right? What can we do with it?" So it's sort of a new version, something different than how does it help us understand, you know, an actual NBA game, for example. But I do think it's a difficult question to go from these coordinates, these XYZ coordinates, to something that's actionable for a team. And it's difficult for two reasons. The first is a technical difficulty. You have to take XYZ coordinates and then turn it into basketball events. And that's not an easy thing to do. Even some simple things like, you know, an alley-oop versus a shot that gets tipped in, you know, from a coordinates perspective can be hard to differentiate. But then you think about things like a pick and roll and whether or not, you know, the big man, you know, slipped the screen, right? And whether you're going to get that level of detail in the coordinates, that's a hard task to go from those coordinates to these specific events. It's also difficult from a basketball perspective. But you know, I could think of a number of places even today where I think it could really help teams. And where I would start, to give an example, if you look at Oklahoma City last year and what they did around Russell Westbrook, and you could argue that roster was not designed to be around Russell Westbrook. Obviously, they lost Durant in the offseason. Maybe that wasn't expected to change things. But if you look at how they ran with Russell Westbrook, there were some things he did that, you know, many analytics would say are not efficient. And one of them is he took a lot of long twos, right? Two pointers greater than 16 feet. And he wasn't very good at them. He was, I think, 0.69 points per shot, right? Which is, so he's about 34.5% from those. He wasn't very efficient at them. And so you might say, if you're going to take, say, 300 of these, right, can we do something else with that? So, but if you look at the spatial tracking data now, you can see, well, what were his options? And one thing that we found in that information is when he took those shots, there was a ton of help defense in the lane. Mm-hmm. So I think it averaged at 2.5 help defenders. So beyond the guy guarding him, he had more than two other guys at least had a foot in the lane that could help if he tried to drive. So that wasn't a very good option. The next thing we could look at is who was his help, who were his options to kick to. And if you look at the corner three, which is, you know, a great pass if he's in the, you know, in the center of the court, and also an efficient 3-point shot, his most common option was Andre Roberson, right? And he's a guy that shot 27% on the corner three, which is a 0.7 point per shot opportunity. So, you know, you look at this situation and at first glance, if you look at the traditional data, you'd say, well, that's not an efficient shot, Westbrook, right? So don't take it. But then you go a level deeper now with the positioning data and you see that he really didn't have options. And what that tells me and what I would tell a team is you've got to go now a step back, right? And say, what are you doing with your roster and your lineups around him? What are you doing with your offensive system that he's in that position, right? We've got to get him in a position where, you know, he's getting a better shot for him. And we've got to get him in a position where he has better options around him.
Sure. You know, as you talk about, you know, 0.67 points per shot, 0.7 points per shot, it brings up something that I think about a lot in this case is that the context and the understanding of what these new numbers mean. You know, I think traditionally, you know, we're used to box score stats, right? And what's good? You know, this guy shoots 55% from the field or he averages 9 assists a game or whatever. How far along are we in an understanding of what these new numbers mean in terms of what's high quality, what's low quality? Has there been good progress made in that? And if not, you know, what needs to happen for that to continue?
Well, so I think from the analytics side, we have a real good sense of what an efficient possession looks like or an efficient shot. So in the NBA, I think we average about 1.1 points per shot. The worst team last year averaged 1.04. The best team, I think the Warriors were at 1.18. So we have a really good sense of what you're trying to get there. And we can convert that, of course, to what it is on a 3-point percentage or a 2-point percentage or a free throw shot. So we understand that on the analytics side, but I would say that where we struggle is that we're, and I suffer from this too. You know, I was a fan of basketball long before I did the analytics. But when someone says something like, you know, you shoot, say, 29% or 30% from three, we tend to get a sense of that's not good, right? Like only 30%. Well, that's the equivalent of a 45% two. And when we say someone shoots 45% from two, it doesn't have that same sort of feeling, right? It doesn't strike this nerve that says, that's not particularly efficient. I think Even myself, with how much I look at the numbers, I still struggle with that at first glance, that conversion from, you know, what is an equivalent three versus a two, you know, and what's effective basketball. I mean, you can go so far as I just said that in the NBA, the average is 1.1 points per shot. That's 55% on a two. And almost no one in the NBA shoots that on mid-range shots, right? But we look at guys in the NBA and if they shoot 52% in mid-range, we think that's effective. That's in a below average shot to get off. So I think where we struggle is, you know, is in that interpretation, right? That first glance interpretation. There's still a part of us that sees the higher percentage, right? That goes back to how we used to think 5-10 years ago and doesn't adjust properly.
Mm-hmm. Steve, I heard you a few months ago on one of my favorite podcasts to listen to, the Hardwood Hustle, and it was in your role working with Shot Tracker, the company. Yes. From my understanding, Shot Tracker is introduced a data analytics, a spatial component that's meant to bring more affordable analytics to the lower sub-NBA levels of basketball, college, high school. What needs to be done for teams like that at the high school level, at the college level, to, I'll just say this clunkily, but do analytics correctly, to gather the appropriate information and then draw good conclusions from them? What I mean, if they don't have the sport view, they don't have the staffs that an NBA team has, how can lower level amateur basketball teams use analytics to their advantage?
So you touched on one of the issues. It's resources, right? It's resources in terms of, you know, how many coaches they have, perhaps, to collect and review and analyze interesting information. It's resources to get the type of stats that might help, more detailed information, something like what Shot Tracker provides. But you know, I would say the biggest challenge is actually, so I think that the lower levels can learn a lot from the investment at the higher levels. So right now at the NBA level, at the Division I college level, we're seeing a lot of good analytics. And I think that what we're learning at that level has a trickle-down effect. However, the lower you go, I think the more the emphasis has to switch to player development, right, as opposed to, say, how to win games. And so if you're talking about a high school team, I don't know that I would be as interested as a high school coach in the analytics around NBA game strategy, partially because I don't have the skill that those guys have, partially because the game's different, right? I mean, at high school, you can have a really effective full court press. You can't have that at the NBA level. But also because, you know, to be a successful high school team, I need to take those kids coming in as freshmen, and between in the 4 years that I have them, they have to improve, right? It's all about player development. So at those lower levels, what they really need is an understanding of what types of drills, what types of practice, what types of data they can collect that can help inform player development, right? So, you know, at those lower levels, for me, it's things like, you know, when we go into practice, you know, how many touches is a guy getting? You know, how many shots are people getting up, right? And then starting to starting to track their success, right? So things like, you know, are we seeing their shooting percentages improve? Are we seeing their assist and turnover rates improve? Are other things, you know, improving? You know, and then going back and trying to understand, how did we get there? Or if we didn't see improvement, why are we failing, right? So, you know, what would be great at that level if there was some, you know, book written, right, or some master database that said something like, hey, you know, 100 high schools across the country, you know, we did these tests, we had them, you know, this group run these types of drills, this group run those types of drills, and then, you know, here was the improvement with these groups, here's the improvement with those groups. We need those types of analytics, right? We need to know when we bring that freshman in that first year, what's the program they're going to be on for 4 years, right, so that they improve from freshman to sophomore year, sophomore, junior year. And you're not going to get that in the NBA analytics, right? Mm-hmm.
That's good advice. It will be interesting to see if some of the – if it trickles up, too, not just trickles down, whereas maybe some of the lower levels come across, again, player development thing or game strategy components to analytics that the NBA could eventually use. But I think that's a good point. Steve, I could talk to you about this for hours. If this is a great topic, I really enjoy speaking about it, but you have four kids, so we're going to wrap this up. Tell our listeners how they can find out more about you online or where they can follow you on social media.
Sure. So you can go to my blog, basketballanalyticsbook.com. I'm also active on Twitter at SteveShea33.
You got anything about the NBA draft coming up then? I know you've written about college player evaluation. Anything we can look for there?
So I do have a draft, an analytics-based draft model, which is a tool, not a ranking, I think. And my sense of this draft is it's pretty good, and I'd say it's pretty good about 10 deep. Right now, the mystery for me is in the 11 to 20 range. I think there are going to be a few gems in there, but I have no idea the order in which they're going to be drafted, and I'm not sure who those gems will be. So I think that's a real challenge for teams.
So you like Malik Monk? Is that your guy here? If I'm reading this properly.
So the model I have loves him. So the model I use is a bit different than others in that I really look for peak performance. Okay. So the idea is that college players, they're going to be inconsistent, especially if we're talking about an 18-year-old freshman. So they're going to have some lows. They're going to have some really bad games. What I want to see is occasional dominance. So what Malik Monk does very well is score, and he was occasionally dominant. He had some games where he put up monster numbers. Was sort of an unstoppable offensive force. So the model says that's going to translate. He'll be a scorer. There are some other questions. That model is based on box score data at the college level, which is not a good way to measure defense. So you have to ask, is he an NBA defender? Who can he defend? I think he has the ability to do it. I would say Fultz is the best prospect in the draft. After that, I think Monk can be in the conversation. I think he's in the conversation with Jackson, Ball, and maybe Fox, although I'm not as high on him as others. I'm a big fan of shooting for the sake of space, especially from the backcourt, and Fox hasn't found a consistent shot yet.
Fox seems like John Wall to me. But again, we could talk about this all day. I'll get off the line with you. Anyway, so again, my guest today has been Stephen Shea of St. Anselm College. At the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Steve will deliver a talk titled Basketball Analytics Spatial Tracking. Hey, Steve, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you.
Great, and thank you for listening today. Again, the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details, and make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @analyticsconf. Thanks for listening.